Welcome to the Play-Based Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Kristen R.B. Peterson, and maybe your new teacher bestie that is here to hype you up, maybe give you a motivating kick in the pants, and teach you all I know about play and childhood. I am here to help you challenge old and outdated practices and inspire you to create a truly developmentally appropriate early childhood environment that fosters creativity, curiosity, and joy in the children that you care for. Let's set the stage for a lifelong love of learning. Let's get going. I am so excited to have Feiji Cabri.
Hey.
Did I say it wrong? Starting over.
Okay. Feiji. Hard.
Okay. Maybe we'll just leave this in because we just had a conversation. This is where this is how my brain works. So I got on and I was like,
oh, you know what Feiji. I used to tell people, think of Faye Dunaway in a karate outfit, a gi, that's how you call it.
Yeah.
Faye gi.
Okay. Yeah. But the funny thing is we had a whole conversation before we hit record and she celebrated with me because I pronounced it right. I even had to Google what a hard G is before we got on. I nailed it. And then I didn't. But okay, you know what? We're leaving it in because, you know, people aren't perfect and I'm not perfect by any means. And I forget things really quickly sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Feiji Cabri is here with me today for the Play-Based Learning Podcast. And I'm really excited to have this conversation because a few different things. Okay. So I went on her Instagram and I started creeping to see what Feiji's all about. I wanted to see, like, is this a good fit for the podcast? And Feiji does a lot around art and art curriculums and has a master's in early childhood education. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
Okay. And I'm going to let you introduce yourself here in a second. Okay, so my philosophy in preschool has been, so I started out as a very, very craft teacher-directed, we're going to do the handprint turkey crafts, and we're going to do the, you know, like, all the things, like cut out the penguin beaks for you and put them on the penguin, making teddy bears out of large sheets of brown construction paper and having them put brads so the arms are movable and the legs are movable, but like, that was where I was at, and then made the switch to completely play-based process art, lots of materials available, let the children create whatever they want to create, whenever they want to create it sort of system. But there's always been that question in my mind, like, where is the point where I could step in and show children a process to get them to the next level? Like, where should I step in for process art and scaffold their learning without interrupting or putting my own adult ideas into their art? Because it's their art. Right. It's intrinsic. That's right. What art is. And right. I don't want to ever stifle somebody's ideas because I put my own in. So that's the background. And I wanted to chat that through with you to see what ideas you have, because I'm sure there's a lot of other play-based learning teachers out there who have made this switch or are thinking of making the switch or are just listening to this now and being like, I need to switch.
Right.
And like, we want somebody who's had experience to maybe walk us through that a little bit. Like, right. When can we without stealing play? So give us a little rundown of who you are, what you do, and like why you're in this space.
Sure. Okay. So I got my degree in early childhood education way long time ago. I'm not going to tell you how old I am. And even though I did tell Kristen, but
I'll keep your secret.
So then I went to a graduate school. People who are in education may have heard of it. It's called Bank Street College of Education. I live in New York and it's in Manhattan. In the city, it's a very, very well-known graduate school of education. It also has a school. It's like lab. So they have like from 3-year-olds to 8th grades. And so you get to see how they're working their, you know, philosophies in education. And it's wonderful. So when I was taking this summer class, it was my art for education. And I had this really wonderful woman who was a teacher. She's not alive many years already. Her name was Lois Lord. And every day we would come in and we were playing with clay or we were doing with painting. And I just fell in love with painting. And every day I was coming, class was doing something else and I was busy painting. And this is where I also got my whole philosophy is that Bank Street doesn't believe in crafts. They only believe in art. So I started teaching and I started from all the, it was a center-based, blocks and, all that stuff. I just loved the art part. I just loved the art part. I just loved what I loved so much about it is just like watching what kids can come up with. So I taught threes, I taught fours, I taught fives. And there's a very big difference in the ages. This is all under first grade. There's a very big difference in what you give them. So I just to a quick rundown. So then I got married and I started having a family and I stayed home to raise my family. And at the same time, while I was doing that, I became a photographer. I did that for 25 years of high-end portrait photographer. I used to drag babies around with me across the country to seminars, rocking a kid in the back of the back of the room. And then I also got him interested in internet marketing. And they said, if you're going to create an information product, do something you know. And what did I know? I knew early childhood education and I knew art. So I created a product called Preschool Art Seminar in a Box. And I started, I sent it out, and there was a school that wasn't, she was fairly local, and she bought it and she liked it. And she called me and she said, "Do you do workshops?" And I said, "Do I do workshops?" "Yes, I
Yes,
do workshops."
I do. You're
And
lucky
I put
day.
together a workshop for her. And I went and she really liked it. And she called me back for another one, like a follow-up. And then I started marketing that. And then I started a blog. I started a blog for for art. But I hadn't been in the classroom in a very long time. I'm one of these shiny objects people. I've taken like 5 million internet marketing courses,
Same.
and I was taking one, and there was one of the mentors there. He said to me, "You can't just have an art website if you're not doing art with kids." So I started dragging neighbors' kids and doing it. And then I had a friend that was starting becoming a principal in a small school. She just had like two under first grade classes, preschool and kindergarten. And I said to her, we had gone to Bank Street together, and I was talking to her one night, and I said, "I think I'm going to be your art teacher next year because I needed content." So I became her art teacher, and I'm in my 11th year, which I'm not going back next year. There's a lot of turmoil in the school. I'm not going back. I'm going to be doing my own classes in my home here. But so I started teaching. I had my blog, and at the same time, I was doing professional development. I was teaching. I put together from the workshops that this woman had asked me to do. I put together a workshop on how to do art in a preschool classroom. Preschool, when I say preschool, I mean anything under first grade. And I realized what I knew where the teachers were coming from. I knew that everybody needs to do their, holiday crafts and their seasons crafts and they're not interested in just doing what a lot of people think process art is, just make a mess, just give the kids all the time whatever they want. And I developed a system on how to bring everything into the classroom and how, because what happened is if I'm going into a school and I'm trying to teach them to move away from something, people can't go from 0 to 100. So I developed like a way of how to do crafts. So like, for example, I developed I call it now the creative trio. So I have a way in the classroom for three things to be going on at once. If you need to do a holiday craft and how to do it so that it fits in it, how it's developmentally appropriate. And then there would be one table, which is process art. But process art can be a whole bunch of different things. And then there is, I have the art center. So different things going on in each center. Now, in the art center, what I've seen from going into schools, a lot of times what's in the art center is it's just, that's where they keep their paints. That's where they keep their easels. They're just like, they're keeping their junk there. So I basically just, so what I ended up doing then in the past year, I developed an online program. I developed an online program for administrators to bring into their schools to teach, because I live in New York. I can't, you know, I like this to out all over the place. So I developed a program showing how this can be done.
Okay.
So do you want me to talk more?
Yeah, I do. Okay. So tell me more about like the three. So I think this is really good because a lot of the audience that listens to this podcast could be switching from, you know, a very traditional craft-based, like that's all they've ever done. They've never really questioned like why
and
they're doing it. Yeah.
It's very intimidating for people who are used to just crafts. It's very, very intimidating for a lot of reasons. Number one is people are scared of parents because they don't know how to explain. I always tell teachers, parents are your biggest advocates. When you explain to parents what you're doing and the benefits the kids are getting, they become your biggest supporters.
Absolutely.
But when you're not confident and you don't know what you're talking about, then it's full that you don't know what to say. So
ooh, that's cold. Yeah.
So I kind of show them. So, okay, let me go back to, I know you had asked me. Okay. We'll start with the three, we divided up. So what I did was I divided up crafts. I took crafts and I said, I made it into, there's five ways that you can do crafts that make it developmentally appropriate, okay? So the first one would be what I call cafeteria style.
Okay.
So that would be when you want something specific to come out. You want puppets, okay? You want puppets, but you want the kids to do the puppets themselves. You want them to think, because one of the things I teach in my program and when I teach in person, I start out by explaining where we get our ideas from. Bank Street does everything based on developmental practices, based on Piaget, based on Dewey, based on Froebel, based on, you know, all these big psychologists. And we want our children to feel good about themselves. We want our children to think and solve problems and to have independence and to be able to have, you know, to be able to make decisions on their own. I remember a mentor of mine many years ago telling me how she was a big early childhood person, and she was once subbing in a second grade classroom, and she had some art supplies and they had some free time. So she gave out the art supplies and she went back to her desk to do some work, and she didn't hear any noise. So she looked up, every single kid was sitting there not doing anything. And she said, "What's going on?" They said, "You didn't tell us what to do. You didn't tell us what to do." So this is the interesting thing. I was just speaking to a woman in my school. There's a lot of transition going on, and she's like an interim principal. And she was telling me, she's one of the things, we were just talking about my program, because I'm sorry, I'm ADD and I jump from one thing to another. But but one of the things I do, the art program that I run now is called TAB. TAB, it's Teaching for Artistic Behavior, which I discovered on Facebook many years ago. I did, for the first four years, I did regular art, even though it was very choice-based. So TAB is a center-based art program. And you have drawing and you have collage and you have painting and you have construction and you have sculpture. You have all different things going on. And so the kids that really want to learn something and want to do something a little more do, and the other kids don't, you offer it to the kids. Okay. So what was I saying? Why was I talking about this? Oh yes. So she was talking to me, this woman was talking to me. She said, one of the things I remember a few years ago, she said, you did a program with parents and children and you gave out the materials and you just told them, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. She said, not one kid sat there not knowing what to do. She said, every kid was confident enough and just went ahead and did it. So a good art program should be instilling in a kid confidence, problem solving skills. So let's say problem solving skills. So sensory, like process only sensory, that's for the very young. For the very young children, let them mush, let them play, let them, okay. But then there comes a point. Some kids will on their own start doing things on their own. Another story I have many, many years ago, I had a little boy come into my classroom. He was from it was from Egypt, I think. And he had never been in school, but he had a very high IQ.
Okay.
And he was very cute little boy. And he came into my kindergarten class and he went over to the easel and he was painting like a three-year-old.
Yeah.
He kept painting. And pretty soon he started painting. He saw him starting to think and starting to put the paint in different places. In a couple of months, he started painting representational figures, because what happens is the older they're getting, kids start painting and drawing what they know, what's in their world, if you allow them to. But it's the way you go from just no, just all process art without doing anything is a little bit of a structure to give the kids some thought. So for an example, who can do an entire collage curriculum just using shapes?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have pictures of a first grade class. I had told them, this was when I wasn't doing tab, I had told them we were doing a snow picture, but it was going to be a torn paper collage. Okay, those were the, I gave them a background, I gave them a bunch of different construction paper. We talked about all the different ideas of what they can do. So that's one of the things in terms of ideas. I will give ideas, but I will give five. I will say, okay, let's talk about it. We can do a snowman, we can do a house, we can do snow in a house, we can do cars in a snow, which I throw out and I get the kids to talk about it. I have two pictures. One kid took big papers and just glued them down on top of each other. There was another little girl who made the most intricate, she, the snowman with the hat, with the house. And I brought them to show to the principal. And it was wild, because the kid that just put pieces on top of each other was having real academic issues. And the other kid was doing very well. Now, I was a preschool director many years also. And this school that I was working in was very focused on developmentally appropriate art. So they would make pictures and hang them on their walls. And I'd walk in the halls and I always knew which kids were struggling and which kids were having problems. So I tell the teachers all the time that if you're going to make the, you're going to walk in and see 25 squirrels strung across the room because it's fall time. And at least in New York, we have squirrels.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to know anything about the kids. They're not going to have any problem solving skills. They're not going to feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
Because when everybody's looks the same, you can't have a kid feeling good. Another story I have is that when I was just out of graduate school and I was busy talking about my philosophies to everyone, I was talking about this point. I was talking to a teenage cousin of mine, and she said, "You know, I can't believe what you're telling me, because when I was in kindergarten, I clearly remember my teacher holding up a piece of artwork and me thinking mine will never look like that." So we are depressing kids' self-esteem. We're taking away their thinking skills. You know, the famous TED show, Sir Ken Robinson.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know it.
You know that I just found out that he's not alive anymore. He died about 3 years ago.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I read a few of his books. So, you know, so I also read a book years ago by a fellow called Daniel Pink.
Oh, yeah. When?
A Whole New Mind, right? A Whole
Oh,
New
okay.
Mind. Okay. And he talks about how everything can be outsourced nowadays, right? For in an American person who can make $75,000 in a job, they can outsource this to a third world country and pay $15,000. The only thing they can't outsource is creativity. And we're not teaching our children to think and solve problems. And this is a problem. Okay.
Absolutely.
You have a piece of paper. You have these collage materials. What are you going to do with it? When my daughter was in a preschool, a nursery program, she was three, and they had orientation. And I went with her and I was sitting on the side, and there was one table set up there. There was some shapes and there was some paste. In those days it was paste.
Paste. I love paste.
And one kid sat down and she took one shape and she put it down and she was done. And the wonderful teacher walked over, sat down next to her, picked up the paper and turned it over. And she said, look, it sticks. Because she knew that that's what this child was learning at that age. Glue and paste sticks things to each other, to paper.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's so when you're, and I see this all the time, I just get so excited watching what they do. So you can give
I do too.
a bunch of different ages to collages or whatever you're doing, and you just see the difference in how they're doing it. And you, what's the word I'm thinking of? Present, the way you present things.
Yeah.
And you're going to have so many different things going on, and we're robbing our children by making them do everything that's all the same. We're robbing
I
them.
know, I know.
But what happens is, so you have teachers that are new and they're scared and they just, what does it mean? Just process only. What I'm just gonna give them messy painting things. So this is, so how I have it, the classroom is like this. I have the crafts because I don't want to take it away from them. I want them to be able to do it. So we were starting with puppets, right? So let's say we puppets. Let's say we're doing paper bag puppets, right? I give them a paper bag. And then they have a cafeteria smorgasbord of stuff. There's googly eyes, there's ribbons, there's shapes, there's papers, there's crayons, and they're making a puppet, but everyone's making their own. And there are some children that are so young, they're going to put the googly eyes on the stomach, and that's fine.
Yep.
And then there's, you know, everyone's going to do something different. And sometimes if a kid is new to this and they're frozen, then I'll come in and say, well, you can do a lot of different things. You have the ribbon. You could put a ribbon here. You can use this if you want an eye. If you, I always throw out a whole bunch of different things. So I have the cafeteria style. That's one. Okay. Then I have, what are they called? Altered art. Okay. Once in all, that's very big in crafts. You open up any, you know, the crafts catalogs, they have all these things that you're gonna paint or collage to send home. So there's nothing wrong once in a while if they do that. You give a fun activity, a fun process activity. You have them do it on an altered art, like they're making a planter or they're making a Mother's Day thing. That's one, which is that I feel is limited. Then we have let's say there are teachers who really, really have a hard time. They must send home those process art things. So let's say it's Valentine's Day. So if the kids are really young, I would just give them a big heart and give them a fun activity to do on top of the heart. So the kids, everyone's happy. The mother's happy. The kid is happy. They don't realize that they're making anything. You know, another thing is, like decorations, stringing. So there, you know, part of my program is I have all these videos on how to do all of these things. So that's the crafts. Okay. If you need to do a craft, if you're open and you don't want to do crafts, it's fine. Then I have the second the second table is my process art. So I love collage. Collage is one of my favorite things. So I'll put out a collage. There's a lot of different collages. Sometimes I'll even do, depends on the age. Sometimes I'll even give them, I'll hang up a whole bunch of pictures of homes, different kinds of houses. We'll talk about houses. And then I give them all kinds of rectangles and squares and all kinds of things. And they can make a house. So this is all about kind of directing things. We can do clay. You know, the air dry clay. I don't have a kiln, so it's air dry clay.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, all the different things that they can do. That's the process art.
Yeah.
Then I have my art center. My art center would be a place where every day or every few days I switch it up. One day they'll get staplers and straws and string and then maybe a very big circle. So the whole point is they have something new.
Yeah.
So they have to think. It's
Yeah.
making them think. It's not just a whole bunch of stuff thrown in. And some kids are great with that and they'll love it and they'll just be great with it. But not every kid is. And some kids need more direction. And my biggest goal is to get things to feel good about themselves, to be competent, to be self-starters, and to think and to really hone their thinking skills.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. So a little background on like my program and like the program that I founded. So I founded a play and nature-based preschool back in 2014. And it was all 100% play-based. So it's all child-led, child-chosen. And that includes art. So that includes process art. And we found over time, we have giant shelves full of all sorts of things, lots of loose parts, lots of recycled materials, lots of cardboard, lots of egg cartons and toilet paper rolls and lots of glue and paint and glue sticks. And it, like we let children, if they are just seeing a bottle of glue for the first time, like they can squeeze the whole bottle of glue out for their art project if they need to, because you can't learn to use the right amount of glue until you've used too much glue or too little glue, right? So we
yeah,
let
I was very I was very impressed with that. I was saying when I was reading about that, what you were doing, I was like, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can do that. I just don't know. I gotta hand it to you, but I don't know if I can do the whole glue thing.
Yeah, that's okay. Every adult has their own boundaries, right? We did notice that when kiddos come in at the beginning of the school year and even throughout the school year with that big shelf of just like open supplies, children weren't drawn to it because they didn't know like what to grab and what to use. And so what we would do is we would just start, we had like basically two tables in the art area all the time. We would just take random stuff, just like you were saying, your art center, and like place random things on the table just to get them thinking and to get them like to spark their curiosity a little bit. And some of the things that children would create were absolutely amazing. And you would have like no idea that a four-year-old created this. Like I had one little guy who wanted to create a giant squid, and he came in and he's like, I'm going to make a giant squid today. And I was like, what do you need? And he's like, I need lots of orange paper and some tape. I was like, okay, I got you. So I just went to the cupboard. I pulled out a whole ream of orange construction paper. I handed it to him. It was like Christmas. He was like, I get this whole thing. I'm like, well, you're making a giant squid. So like, you're probably going to need a lot. And he then, with the prior knowledge that he came to the classroom with, like he was just really into giant squids. He knew that like a giant squid's tentacles could be like 32 feet long or something wild like that. So he asked for something to help him figure out how long 32 feet was. I was like, well, I know just the thing. Let's go to the janitor's closet and find a tape measure. So we did. And I taught him like what all of those marks mean on the tape measure and how to pull it out and how to stop it so that you can like measure 32 feet. And he created this whole entire giant squid. It took hours. And it was phenomenal, the outcome of his giant squid. And like, it just, like children astound me when
what
they
an
are
experience. And what, see, that's classic Bank Street. That's classic Bank Street, to learn from what their interests are. Like
absolutely.
He learned about measuring. What, I mean, what a lesson he got on measuring.
Absolutely.
Just coming from him. I'd love to see a picture of that. Do you have a picture?
Oh, I have a picture of him holding it up. He's standing on the table holding it, and you can't see all the legs, but you can see one of the tentacles trailed way on the floor behind him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's pretty cool. It was a great experience.
Wow.
So, but I think that, so like, yes, it can be very difficult for early childhood educators who are in that craft mindset to switch over to process-based art. But one of the things that I teach to early childhood educators is like, if we're really in the business of doing what's developmentally appropriate for young children, it's not about us and what we like, and it's not about the parents and what they like. And so if we're really in the business of doing what is developmentally appropriate for the age and stage of children that we're working with, then we will advocate for process-based art, and we will teach others how all of the things that they're learning through making a giant squid, and help others see the learning that's happening through some of those messy things, like, or through some of the not messy things. Because in a play-based program, art can be super messy, but it also can be like super contained.
You know what, Kristen? You know
well.
What, Kristen? You know why some people get intimidated? Because you have that. This is a very hard thing about like play-based and things like that. You have to be a really in-tune teacher.
You do. It's very reflective.
If you're not in tune, you have to be waiting for those learning opportunities.
Yeah.
And if you're not, so some people will just say, let him play, let him this, let, and they're not there to jump in and take the play further.
Yeah.
And if you, so that it's not for everyone. Not every teacher is able to do this. If
Absolutely.
You're rigid, if you're a perfectionist, you know,
yep.
ADD people are very good for this.
Yes, we are.
I'm serious, because there's so many people that are so perfectionistic. That's one of the, it's not just parents they're worried about. They're worried they can't take it. They
yeah.
can't take something because of their own childhood, but they can't take it. And you have to be so in tune to be able to jump in and take this experience and make it into a learning moment.
Absolutely. Yes. You have to be very reflective, and you have to, I mean, it's a lot of work being a play-based learning educator.
Right. Yes.
It's a lot of work, but the payoff is giant, and it's
right.
so magical. And you actually are a lot less stressed in the classroom
right.
because
right.
you're
it's
letting children.
It's a different kind of work.
Yeah.
So it's like people ask me also, like what I'm doing now in my tab, I don't have to prepare lesson plans. So that is no stress, but it's, I have different centers going on, and I have to be able to do what you're doing in each of the sentence. Oh, you do. Example, just today, we were doing printmaking. I was teaching, this was some fifth graders, how to make collographs. You know what a collograph is?
I do not.
Okay, so we've been making stamps out of foam. Like you cut up
yeah.
foam, and then you color them with marker, and then you take a spray of water, put it on, and you stamp it. But now I have printmaking ink.
Yeah.
So a collograph is more of a, on cardboard, it's like a large stamp kind of.
Yeah.
So I was having them make scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And this one little girl walked in. She's very good at drawing. She's fifth grade. What is it called? A-N-I-M-E. How do you pronounce that?
A-N-I-M-E. Anime.
Okay. So she had made this. She's very good at that. And I said, how about we make that into a stamp?
Ooh.
And I showed her how to copy it onto the foam. And, you know, and then we rolled it. And she was like so thrilled.
Yeah.
But if you're not aware of all the different things and what's possible, then so it's harder in that way, you know?
Yeah.
So like preschool teachers that spend all their time cutting out
I did
projects.
that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's so stale. It's not
Yeah.
rich. It's not rich and
Absolutely.
vibrant and growing and,
Right.
you know.
Okay. What a thought that just went through my head is okay. So, like, I was looking at your Instagram, and I follow a lot of like creative adults on Instagram that are creative through like the visual arts. And, I often like will look at what they've created and be like, wow, like that's so amazing. I want to do something like that. And so as an adult, I will pull up a video or something and see how somebody did something and then try to replicate it in my own way.
Right.
Their tutorial video or whatever it is. Like
right.
there was a point where I wanted to learn how to draw on Procreate, how to create a beautiful picture on Procreate. And so I actually took a Skillshare class by I don't remember her name, but she's very, very popular in the digital drawing world,
okay.
Procreate. And I took a class and I spent 3 hours just one day creating on my
right.
iPad, and it was amazing and lovely. And I was so proud of what I created in the end. And so I often think about that, like, in the preschool, like I don't want to give children any direction unless they ask, because I want them to experience things and learn through curiosity and inquiry and trial and error and problem solving. But also, like, I recognize as an adult, like we do search out
okay, so this is very
ways to do
interesting,
things.
Because in my very quick explanation of my, my whole, my autobiography, one of the things that, what happened was when I was working on my website, I took a course on how to help, how to do my website better. And I had a lovely woman that was mentoring me. And I was talking about how a lot of the reason that people, you know, specifically women, because that's where I worked with, feel like they can't draw, right? You'll hear this all over the place. Me? I can't draw a straight line with a ruler, right? Is a lot of it is because of when they were younger. When they were younger, they weren't allowed the opportunity to feel good and to know that, number one, every creativity is inborn. Artistic skill is not. So there are people that are drawn with a golden pencil in their mouth and they just automatically know how to draw. But like I tell some of the kids in my class, I say, does anyone expect you to sit down and play Mozart without learning and without taking lessons? Mm-hmm. But for some reason, people think that only people that know how to draw naturally are allowed to be artistic. So what happened was, I was talking to this mentor about the fact that I was, all these people can't, draw a straight line. And she said to me, would you consider starting a website for adults on creativity? And I said, I'm open for anything. And I ended up starting to do research and I came across a term, mixed media. What that is? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I fell in love with mixed media, mixed media art. So I went down a rabbit hole for a number of years. I was doing mixed media. I was into alcoholing. So I was making courses and I was giving in-person workshops and I was mixed media. And then I got brought back into my education. I was taking this course with this woman. She's a big mixed media person, Kelly Wynn. I don't know if you've come across her, but so she's the one that she brought me back to my education. She said, you have to go to where you're an expert at. But mixed media is the perfect thing for people who want to do art and want to be creative, but don't want to take the time to learn how to draw, because you can learn how to draw. It is hard work. Yeah. You can learn how to do anything, but it is hard work. And I see when the kids get to about fifth or sixth grade, that's where they start dividing. The ones who just love art and want to continue. When I heard a kid, I was traumatized. In the beginning of this year, I heard a sixth grade girl saying last year, I can't draw a straight line. I'm saying, student said that. I could not believe it. And I just realized that there comes a point when they're very young, they're just process art, and they're not scared and they'll draw anything and it doesn't matter how it looks. Comes a point when they're like preteen, like fifth, sixth grade, when they start becoming uncomfortable, it doesn't look right. So I say everyone has a choice. You can learn. There are many, many skills in art. You can learn, because there comes a point where you can't just, if you want to just do creative stamping and stenciling and painting, get an art journal. There's 5 million YouTube videos. There's 5 million courses. There are so many things to do mixed media. But if not, you can learn how to draw. You can learn how to do anything. There's a very famous program called Betty Edwards. You know Betty Edwards? Mm-hmm. Is drawing on the right side of the brain. Drawing on the right side of the brain, and she has a book and she has a workbook, and she can teach anybody. She's not alive anymore, I don't think, but it's a program. You can teach anybody how to draw if you want to put in the time. Absolutely. So that's the point. Art is for everybody. Art is the most calming, therapeutic. Mm. Another book I read called The Creativity Cure, written by a husband and wife doctor team. Talking out the Barons, I think their names are, that's their last name, talking about what creativity does for you, how it's better than therapy, how it's better than drugs, using your hands, handwork, what it does for you, the effects. So that's what I was into this for a very long time with adults. And now I moved back into kids. So I've had experience with kids from 2 to 82.
Yeah.
And I see the whole continuum.
Yeah.
And I see what it's all about. And I see that art is for everyone. You have to decide if you want to do something more artistic, then go learn it. And you can.
Absolutely.
If not, go to mixed media.
Absolutely.
And have a ball.
Okay. So let's just, maybe before we wrap up, since you've had experience with so many ages, at what, okay, so maybe you could go through, so like What does art mostly look like for kids that are 2, 3, 4? What does it look like? How does it evolve
Okay. So
as
this is
far as
right.
like
So this is
when
also,
we should
okay.
step in and like
Right.
give processes to
Okay. So
and ideas?
this is one of the big problems where a lot of teachers have, because when you have a 2-year-old and you have a 3-year-old and a lot of 4-year-olds, their art is a mess. It is
Yeah.
a mess
A
because
beautiful mess,
a beautiful
but it's
mess,
full of learning.
but they are learning the materials.
Yes.
I have a friend who's an atelierista. Is that how you say it? You know what Reggio Emilia?
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
she's extremely artistic and she's very neat. I'm a little disorganized, and
Same.
she goes into the school and she makes the most gorgeous displays of the kids' messes. And she hangs them up and she writes what they say.
Oh,
And
yes.
they look like museums. So
Yes.
I tell teachers, if your kids have messes when they're 2 and they're 3 and even a little 4, frame them. Put them in a book. We had an art camp. My daughter ran an art camp. In every summer, what she would do is she had very little kids, and let's say they'd make messes, right? She would save it. She'd take a binder, put one of the messes in one part of the sheet protector, and then she'd write what it is, sometimes how we did it, so you can do it at home. And it was the most beautiful book. So what it does is it brings up the level of this process art. And as they get to, oh, bless you. As they get to 4 and 5, like I always liked fives the
Yeah.
best because they're actually making something. So, a little confession over here. I do like when kids are making things,
It starts to look
and
like
they're
a thing.
right. And they're, and they're so creative when you let them, the
Oh,
things
yeah.
that they do. Fours, you can see it a little bit. So 2s and 3s, don't expect anything. Messes. 4s, you'll have both. 5s, they are already starting. First grade, then first grade, second grade, third grade are like I find like second and third grades, those are the real ages where they're really like exploding with creativity and what they can do. And fourth and fifth, and then in about fifth, sixth, maybe seventh, then they start realizing who is the natural artist, and they might want to have that, more direction. You want to take a class. You want to learn how to do this. Or on the other hand, we can do some, what is it, mixed media. So, all kids are different, but this is really the basic general thing that I see happening. And since I became an art teacher, I like working the best I find with the second and the third grades. It's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, one last question.
Yes.
So this is something I've grappled with a little bit. If a kiddo comes up to you and says, "Help me draw a cat," how do you draw a cat? A lot of times, like I in the past would have been like, what do you think a cat looks like? How do you think you could use shapes to draw a cat? Because I don't want to draw my, I might, it might be more intricate when I draw a cat, and they might not be capable of drawing the cat like I do. And I don't want to like squash their self-concept, like their self-esteem. And so I would kind of put it back on them. However, somebody once said, my friend Jeff Johnson, he said, well, would you, if a kid came to you and asked, will you teach me how to tie a shoe? Would you say, I wonder how you can tie your own shoe? No, you would teach them how to tie their shoe.
Right.
So, can you teach them to draw a cat when they're 4 years old?
Okay, so this
Your
is
thoughts
funny
on
because
that?
I went through this also. I also went through this. You never teach anything, you never tell them anything. So we would do things like a kid would come over and say, I want to make an airplane. I say, okay, so tell me, show me in the air, what's the shape of an airplane, right? So they would go like this. Okay, what else does an airplane have? And oh, windows. Okay, what else they've had? And up to a point, at a certain age, they're happy with that. So if I would say, I did this with a grandson of mine recently. He wanted to make a bear, and he's in a school where the teacher does real crafts, and I see the effect, how he needs things to be perfect now because he's having everything. But I said, do you want to make a bear? Okay, what does a bear have? a Betty here, and he put it together, but he's almost four, and that's okay. One of the things I did learn from Tab is that it's okay. I have a lot of step-by-steps. I have both. I have a lot of files in my classroom. I have a book of animals. I have a file of butterflies. I have a file of things to eat. I have a file of vehicles, transportation. And sometimes if a kid wants to make, we go look for a picture. And as they're getting a little older, they can try to do that. We have a lot of step-by-steps. So I have moved a little bit to say, it's okay. Nothing's going to happen if you're not forcing it and you can help them with it. So I hear where you're coming from, because I also was a real purist at one time. And what kind of business is that? But if it's not the only thing, if you want to do it, and you also, one of the things I teach kids is like, one of the things I do with them is they do landscapes. So I have like this box full of landscapes. I teach them, first grade is not, even like starting maybe second grade, I teach them with a horizon line and where you put things in the bottom and it gets a little bit higher. And I tell them, you're the artist. You decide, do you want that tree there or no? Do you want to put one over here? You can mix and match. And so I do see that sometimes when they do a lot of these step by steps, it makes them more confident. And then they can go to a regular picture. And you want to hear something that I learned just this past year that was very shocking.
Tell me.
The old masters, some of them, used to use a machine to transfer the image of the person they were drawing onto their canvas.
Really?
And they would trace that. Now, they had a tremendous amount of skill and they were able to do all the painting and the shading. But is that not wild?
That's wild.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So
So they needed a
here
little
we,
help too.
and it's also for one a period of time, I was into this woman who wrote a book on the Monart method. You've heard of that?
No.
She believes that in teaching kids how to draw, she believes that she could teach 4-year-olds how to draw, and she believes that you can be doing the symbolic drawing, the regular. It's not any different. It's different than the teaching how to draw, and it doesn't interfere with each other. She has a whole business where she trains teachers how to teach the Monart method. And one of the biggest things I learned, she has these myths, 8 myths about what you knew about drawing, is that an artist draws from the imagination. Didn't you always think that you're not an artist because you can't draw from your imagination? Well, I did too. And guess what? Artists copy. And there's nothing wrong with that. And because that's how you learn, by copying. So that was an
Hey.
eye-opener for me. That was a huge eye-opener for me. So I'm coming, I understand you, because I also came from this very traditional crafting world. And then I went,
Same.
everything, total chaos. But it's not. Because you have
It's not
anarchy,
chaos.
right? You have anarchy then. So it's just there has to be, it has to have some kind of guidelines at the right ages, at the right stages, and each kid is all different.
So good. So good. Okay. Tell people where they can find you, where you hang out, and if you have anything going on, they can take advantage
Okay. So I have this free mini course that's on my website, which is EduArt for Kids. So it's EDU Art number 4. kids.com. If you go to that, it's really teaching you how to ditch the copycat crafts mindset. It's a little mini course. It has like a little PDF that explains the basics, some article I wrote once, a video, and then there's some videos of examples. So it kind of can get you started. And then you do get onto my list. At this point, there's only, just like I said, I'm ADD, so I haven't got to yet sending like a weekly, I will be sending like weekly, tips full of value for teachers, for
Amazing,
parents, whoever
amazing.
wants to do that. But so that's where it is. EduArt for Kids. Now, on Instagram, I'm not a big social media person, so I don't know if you noticed, but mine is a static grid.
Oh, no, I
You
haven't
notice
noticed
that?
that.
You didn't notice. So I needed to have a presence on Instagram. That account used to be my mixed media account.
That's why I saw that below this line. That's
Right.
genius. That's
So
amazing.
I changed over and I made it a static grid. I am going to start doing reels and stuff like that, mostly talking head. I've just been very intimidated by it. But so I'm on Instagram. I am going to go onto TikTok because I saw there's a lot of teachers on TikTok. Are you
Oh
on
yeah.
TikTok?
I am, but I'm not. I don't know. I just that one intimidates me a little bit.
Right. Okay. So I'm in this group now. I really should tell you about this. You know, when we get off, I'm gonna tell you about a group. But I just heard about this. I thought TikTok was all about kids, young kids, and people dancing. And I'm EduArt for Kids. I'm on LinkedIn, EduArt for Kids. Everything's EduArt for Kids, and it's eduartforkids.com. And oh, if you want to email me anything, I'm at Faigie, Faigie, at EduArt for Kids.
Amazing. My cat just crawled up on my desk. You probably can't see him because he's below the camera.
I do a little bit, I see.
Oh, you do? Okay. He's just like wanting attention right now. Okay. Thank you so much, Faigie, for being here, for lending us your
My
expertise,
pleasure.
For answering the questions. I know that a lot of early childhood educators are going to get a lot of goodness out of this episode. So I appreciate you. I appreciate the work you're doing in our
My
field.
My pleasure.
And I wish you all the best. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you.
If you liked what you heard today, share this podcast with your coworkers, admin, or maybe even your partner. And I love getting 5-star reviews so more people can embrace play. Hit follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode. Or connect with me on Instagram or my website, KristenRBPeterson.com. Until next time.